First of all, I'd like to just remind you that today is a very special Sabbath. Today is the day that we remember the life and the death of Jesus on the cross, the hope of all mankind, made possible through Jesus Christ. And we want each of you to know, and those of you that are visiting us today, we believe in open communion, which means anyone, everyone participates if you would like to. And so we welcome you to our little church family here at Point Loma. We've been going through the book of Matthew, and it seems that Matthew here in the last part of the chapter 8 is contrasting great faith with weak faith or small faith. You see, he has just gone through a series of incredible miracles. First, the healing of the leper, which was good faith. The healing of the centurion's servant, which was great faith, according to Jesus. And then he went and healed Peter's mother-in-law. And he cast out a few demons, and he healed some people that were sick. Well, you see, the disciples had no problem processing that. This was incredible. This man must be the equivalent of Elijah or Moses. I mean, the incredible miracles that Jesus was able to perform. And they got all excited when they saw Jesus performing these miracles. However, we find that Matthew is contrasting these stories for a reason. And that is that often we find it hard to apply faith in our own lives. It's great to see other people. It's great to see other people experience healings and miracles. But when it comes to our own lives, we figure that's great for other people, but I'm not so sure about myself. Well, you asked the question this morning, so why the struggle in our own lives? Why the storms in our lives? Well, I can't really give you a definite answer on why there are storms in our lives, other than the fact that we live in a world where there is turbulence, there is trouble, there is hardship, there is difficulty, there is pain, and there is suffering. And often it's after we pass through the storm, through the difficulty in life, through the hardship in life, it's after that then we realize, we look back and we say, aha, I see, now I understand. As I was reading this story of the disciples caught in the storm, I began to realize that here in this story, that Matthew is trying to make a point. He's trying to help the readers understand that faith sometimes comes in a struggle. It comes in a time of storm, in a time of turmoil, in a time of difficulty or a time of hardship in our lives. And it's during those storms that we are often forced to face our apathy or our indifference. You know, often when it comes to our own lives, when it comes to the challenges that come our way, we say, well, you know, maybe God's a little too busy with other things, with other people. And he's so far away, and he's so involved in much bigger things than my little problems in life, I just won't bother him. It's really not a big deal anyway, you know. I accept the fact that he is a great God, and that's probably good enough. I'd like to suggest this morning, like Matthew here, that it's the storms in our lives that help us wrestle with the whole concept of faith, of our relationship, our confidence in God. Secondly, I realized as I read this passage of Scripture that storms are often humbling experiences. You see, here are the disciples, and they're out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. This was their element. They were fishermen. These were strong, buff guys. These guys could withstand incredible acts of strength. They were great, hardy men. And here they are in the midst of their elements, and all of a sudden those elements turn on them. A storm sweeps in across the mountaintops down into the Sea of Galilee, and all of a sudden they find themselves in the midst of a great storm, great turbulence. And so they do all the things that they know they're supposed to do. They row harder. They pull down the sails because they know if they keep the sails up, they're liable to lose the sails. So they stick to the oars and they strain at the oars. These are strong men, as I said before. They're pulling on the oars. And yet they find themselves going nowhere. Not only that, but they find that these waves are getting bigger and bigger. These are huge waves. In fact, the scriptures tell us that the waves were going over the boat. Now, these were not big sailing ships. These were small little rowboats. They were just little fishermen's boats, really. And here they are in the midst of a great storm. And they're yelling and shouting orders back and forth to each other. And they're rowing harder and harder. And they see that the waves are getting bigger and bigger. It must have been an extremely humbling experience for men like Peter, James, and the other disciples to realize that suddenly now they had met their match. That everything that they knew about being sailors and fishermen, that everything they knew about the Sea of Galilee was now of no value to them. Their rows were, their oars were useless. Their strength was useless. They were caught up in a superstorm, a storm that they believed was not, that they were not going to conquer, but they were going to lose, possibly lose their lives. It was humbling. You see, storms are a humbling experience. And often humility heightens our senses. Often in times of humility, in times when we realize that nothing that we can do is going to make any difference in our lives, that's when we often begin to listen. We begin to see God at work in our world around us. It's often during those times that we hear, our ears are tuned to hearing the Word of God and to hear God speaking to our lives. It's during those times of storm, those times of humility, when we realize that we can't do anything to save ourselves, that we begin to feel God moving in our lives. It was once said that pride seeks its own direction, but humility seeks direction. When we are humble, we can see our greatest needs, and we are willing to listen and to follow. Another dynamic that I discovered in this story is that often in a storm we begin to internalize what faith really is all about. You know, it's easy to intellectualize faith. Most of us have no problem defining faith. Faith is believing things we don't see. Faith is something that grows in our lives. Faith is something that is a gift of God. Faith is believing in a loving, caring God. We can talk all day about it. We can theologize about it. We can philosophize about it. But it's another thing for us to learn to cling to Jesus Christ, to learn to cling to faith as a drowning man clings to the lifesaver. It's easy to believe what God has done and said, but quite another thing to believe that He will actually do something in our own lives. You see, Matthew is pointing out that the lesson Jesus is trying to teach the disciples here is to internalize their faith. And those of us that have been raised in Christian homes, in Christian environments, we grow up with this theory or this intelligence, this concept of faith. We can intellectualize about it, we can define it, we can decipher it, we can break it down. But it's a whole other thing when you're in the middle of a storm to actually experience and to know and to cling to God and to internalize it. You know, I realize, and I think all of us realize, that it's not an easy thing to live by faith in a non-believing world. And what Jesus is trying to do here with the disciples, He's trying to help His disciples to transition from an intellectualized faith to an internalized faith. The storming experiences are often the times when we grow. That's when our faith grows, our faith in God. I don't know what yours is this morning. What storm are you caught up in? Maybe not in a storm. I think most of us, though, have something in our life that creates big waves. Sometimes we feel helpless and sometimes we feel hopeless. Maybe it's a job, a loss of a job. Maybe it's wondering about the future, not sure what you're going to do when you graduate from college or from the university. Maybe it's the economic slump. Some of us have got really messed up, maybe in the stock market, or our 401ks got all messed up in the stock market. Maybe it's a family problem. Maybe it's a crisis in your own family. Something that seems so big and so overwhelming that you just think you're going to drown. You just don't know how you're going to find your way out. Everything you have tried to do has failed, and now you don't know what to do. And maybe it's a personal battle. It could very well be that you're battling with the whole concept of internalizing your faith. That may be your storm. I know it's been for me. It still is. I still have an intellectual understanding of faith. I've read books on faith. I've heard sermons on faith. I've been to seminars on faith. I've been every kind of imaginable, concept of faith. But internalizing that faith and accepting the fact that God is working out His will in my life, that even in the storms, when the storms come, Jesus is there with me. And He hasn't forgotten me. He hasn't forsaken me. That's something that I have to learn to internalize. We resist it. Because really, by nature, human beings, well, we're just independent. By nature, we just like to be on our own. We like to kind of row the boat ourselves. And actually, we're often taught to be that way too. We're taught to be self-sufficient. Look at me, God. See how hard I'm rowing? Oh, don't worry. The storm's no big deal. I can bail the boat. Don't worry about that, God. I know how to bail. I'll bail like crazy. Can you imagine? Here are the disciples. They've gone from sailing to rowing, and they've given up on the rowing, and now they're bailing as fast as they can. And still, they're being swamped. I remember when I think back on some of the trips I've made by boat when I was a kid growing up in Borneo, we would go out, four or five times a year out to the little atolls and little islands, little coral atolls and little islands off the mainland there. And we would just go down to the dock and we'd hire a guy that had a little boat. When I say little boat, the boats weren't much bigger than, put two pews together in length and that was it, okay? And we would go sometimes several miles out to sea to these atolls, these islands, not even thinking about, these boats really seaworthy or not. And we would putt, putt, putt out there, little single-cylinder motors, and never even thinking once about how dangerous that really was. I remember one time we hired this guy to take us out in his little boat. The things were very tipsy, too. These were not really not seaworthy. They were more for like rivers. But these guys, they thought they were safe, and we trusted them. So we all piled in this boat with all our gear and our snorkeling and our scuba gear and everything. And we took off in this boat, headed out for this island. We couldn't even see it from the mainland, but he knew where it was. And so we just trusted him. And about halfway out to this island, we began to realize that our feet were getting wet in the boat. And I looked down, and I noticed that the water was rising. And then I realized up towards the front of the boat that you could almost, you could see the water kind of squirting through two planks like this down at the bottom of the boat. And the guy at the front of the boat was bailing with a little, like half of a coconut, he was bailing water. And I realized that the faster he bailed, the water wasn't going down. It was staying level and actually coming in faster. And then pretty soon, the guy that was running the motorboat was bailing with another hand. And pretty soon, we all got our canteens out and we got whatever we could find. And we were bailing like crazy. But the boat was still being filled up with water. And now we're out in the middle of a shipping lane, a very dangerous. We could see oil tankers and other stuff going by. And we're going, hey, guess what? We're in big trouble here. Not to mention the sharks that we saw swimming around. And we realized that this boat was not going to, actually the leak was getting worse. And so finally, the driver, the pilot, the captain of the boat, he noticed that there was a little sort of a sandy atoll or whatever you want to call it off to one side. And so he just ran the boat right up on the sand, out in the middle of nowhere. We're standing out there, seven or eight of us looking around, and here's this boat full of water. The guy didn't seem to be worried. We tipped the boat up, water poured out. He had a little jar of like tar, looked like black tar. And he took his shirt off. He had an old t-shirt that was full of holes, and he ripped it up into long shreds, and he dipped it in this tar, and then he went over with a hammer and a chisel, and he just tapped this wet t-shirt with tar on it in the crack of the boat, and he says, "Let's go, we're ready to go." I don't know, I felt probably safer to swim back to shore. But we made it. We made it to the atoll. We went scuba diving. We made it back home. But you see, the disciples, they believed that if they could just bail faster, that somehow they would be safe. Not so true. Yes, we're tired of bailing. Often that's when we realize that we need Jesus in our lives. And we have all kinds of excuses that we make, you know, for the issues and why the water's coming in the boat. We have all kinds of parenting tapes going through our heads. We're full of excuses. But the bottom line is, at some point in the journey, some point in the storm, we need to turn and recognize that Jesus is the one who will bring peace in the storm. And so the disciples, after they realized that the bailing wasn't going to work, the boat was going down, they remembered that Jesus was there. And Jesus is fast asleep through the storm. He was in peace because he knew who his heavenly Father was. So Jesus, he wakes up, they wake him up, he gets up, and the first thing that he says, "O ye of what? Little faith." And then he turns and says to the storm, "Peace, be still." And the storm dissipates. I can imagine that as they sat there waist deep in water in their boat, when Jesus did this, suddenly the lights went on in their heads. Suddenly they realized that they needed to internalize their faith and their belief in Jesus Christ, the Son of God. To that point, Jesus had performed all kinds of miracles. He had healed the sick, and he had healed the lepers, and he cast out demons, and he'd done all kinds of things. In their heads, they're going, "Yeah, he's Elijah, or he's Moses, or he's some great prophet that's come here." But now, Jesus is in control of the forces of nature. And they knew they were now in the presence of a living God. I don't know about you. You can intellectualize your faith all you want, and you can discuss it and debate it and all the pros and the cons and the ins and outs and the ifs and the what ifs and all that stuff. But I can tell you right now that intellectualizing faith is not going to save you. Only Jesus can save you. And you know, I'd like to suggest something that when you do realize in the midst of that perfect storm that the only way you're going to survive is to invite Jesus into your boat, I would like to recommend that you not ask him to just help you bail. Really, because that's all the disciples were asking for. "Come on, wake up, what are you sleeping for? Help us bail." No. When you ask the Son of God to come into your life, don't ask him to just bail. Ask him to bring healing into your life. Ask him to calm the storm in your life. And I don't know what that storm is. It might be emotional. It might be physical. It may be spiritual. Whatever the storm in your life is, you need the Son of the living God to stand up in your life and say, "Peace, be still. Be gone." Don't ask him to bail. Ask him to heal. That's what we're here this morning to celebrate, the life and the death of Jesus. And Jesus prepared a room. They prepared a room for Jesus and his disciples, the upper room, to partake in the feast. And Jesus came into the room and there was another storm. Yeah, it was a mess. The disciples were all arguing and fighting with each other. It was a huge storm. All these proud, egotistical sailors. All these guys that just, you know, were so used to doing it their own way. And Jesus came into that room and he washed their feet, showing his humility and love for them. And even when they objected to it, he said, no, I'm going to wash your feet. He wanted to show them that true love is humble love, is servanthood love, love that is willing to reach out and touch the lives of other people.